Yo, welcome to Voices from the Dark on RBL Berlin. It's a very nice day here in Neukölln at Labetto Lab. This is episode 19 of the artist series, artist number 12. As usual, I'm going to let my guest introduce himself. Today I have actually a friend of mine, ex-coworker of my wife. We have a past, we have a history. This is Dennis, but before that, as usual, I just want to direct everybody to the website bornfromthedark.com, get updates on different series like this series, the artist series, Mistaken Ideas, the philosophical podcast about fallacies, and the very new, one episode old, The Spectrum, a political podcast. So, yeah, just wanted to, you know, shout out my own shit. Before we get on to talking to Dennis, who is, I'm just going to let him introduce himself. Dennis, all right. Welcome. Okay.
Well, thank you, Steve. My name is Dennis. My last name is Arslan, which means lion. I have no affinity with that, but, you know, just as a side information. Well, actually, I'm 39 years old. I was born in Turkey and raised there. Not a very small town, actually. Relatively big town, not a big city, let's say. But it is so obscure that even some people from Turkey have never heard of it. The name of the town. It's called Uşak. It's like Turkey's answer to Bielefeld in Germany. That is running joke about Bielefeld not existing. Oh. So I've heard similar things about my hometown.
I don't even know that. What is that town?
There you go. Okay. Any case, after a while, I was born, raised in the city, and then I studied in Ankara, which is the capital city of Turkey, and then I spent some time in the U.S. actually, in New Hampshire, for give or take 3 years. I guess, and then I happened to come to Berlin 13 years ago.
Okay.
Since then, I've been living here. I studied economics, but I have never done anything related with economics in my life, which is I'm proud to say.
Okay.
I'm not proud to say that I'm not very rich, but, you know, at the same time, this was kind of like the outcome of that decision, unfortunately. What I do right now is actually, the reason I'm here, of course, is I am an artist, but
you're a writer.
Yes, I am a writer. Yeah, let's talk about that. Actually, I have been writing lots of stuff for a long time. I have been also doing lots of translations from English to Turkish, a lot of them literature translations. But what I write is short stories, mostly.
Okay.
My first book published almost like 3.5 years ago, which was a collection of short stories. It was published in Turkey, in Turkish, of course. I also try my hand in English, but mostly I write in Turkish.
Okay.
And then another book has just been like a few months ago published. It was more like an experimental project, which we wrote with two friends. It is also a fictional book. But at the same time, it is a bit different from what I wrote before. And this one is kind of like a novella. It's not short stories, but it's just one condensed long story, let's say. And apart from that, I co-wrote one screenplay with the same guys. We wrote the experimental book project. And it was kind of like a relatively minor success, I would say. It's an art house movie, but it got some awards in Turkey and elsewhere. Also some festivals in Europe.
So did you produce it as well?
No. I was only involved in the writing screenplay part. I had a contribution in the screenplay, but apart from that, I have no idea about filmmaking, actually. And also, I'm kind of like also dealing with another similar project, which we haven't realized yet. But let's see, we will with the same crew actually. And then also, yeah, more or less that's what I do as an artist. And apart from that, I happen to own a place in Neukölln as well.
I definitely do want to get to that, yeah, because it's an important part of this artist series, is that, you know, it's like how do you live as an artist, not just what do you do. And you gave a very, very clear rundown of what you do and where you're from. So we can talk about the how, like how you actually, you know, make your way through life as an artist a little bit later. But what I go for usually is just very simple questions in these interviews. It's like who, what, when, where, why, how. You've already answered a lot of those questions, and we can go deeper.
Yeah.
But one of the more specific questions about your sort of artistic life that I usually ask about to most guests is what was the first, you know, basically it's like the beginning of your path as an artist. So what was the first time in your life that you did something artistic, thought you were an artist, felt it, that you were an artist? Where did it all start? Like a smallest detail, or like just some big feeling that you had? Could be anything.
Yeah, sure. I think I have to then go back to my high school years, because I mean, one of the first things I remember, in terms of artistic activity, if you could call it artistic activity, is like I was into a lot of comedy shows, which were quite popular back then in Turkey. And I have been trying my hand in writing also like small sketches for you know, to be staged by students, by myself, by my friends, blah, blah. Also, like I used to be a Boy Scout, and in these Boy Scout camps, every small group there's these big like nights of entertainment, and every group has to come up with something artistic, and all my group was depending on me to come up with something, to write something, or to just tell them that okay, we can stage this one, we can make people laugh, blah blah. So in that sense, I think I was that was my kind of first start. And then afterwards, when I got into college, I seriously started to this time write very little short stories, more like minimalistic stuff, what they call now flash fiction or so.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then at some point I realized that this is what I really like to do, and I want to do, and I can kind of do. So there was this kind of confidence slowly, you know, growing in me.
Okay.
That would be the... I think my first forays into this ecosystem.
Okay, and this was all in Turkey, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I mean, all in Turkey, like because I studied up until the college days. I was always in my hometown, so back there I was kind of trying to come out. If you want to romanticize it, there was these old typewriter which I found at home. Mm-hmm. Like my father had it back when he was younger, so I liked it very much. And this, I remind you, of course, kind of like the pre-computer days. I mean, yes, there were still computers, but not in every household, for sure, not in mine at least. So that was also kind of like a revelation to me that, you know, like, okay, now I have a typewriter, so I should write something, right? I mean, you wouldn't go, this great invention to go wasted, it would be a shame.
So was then it, was it given to you? Was it a gift?
No, it was at home there, and nobody was using it. Okay. It was somewhere in some closet. I just found it. I asked them if I could, you know, like put it in use, and of course nobody said, you cannot, I mean. There's nothing dangerous about a typewriter. It's not like a computer. Well, so
you can lift it up and
exactly. Yeah,
it's quite usually quite heavy.
And that I never tried actually. Yeah, that's something.
It's one of those old heavy ones, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it was an Olivetti.
Oh,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. So
I'm not familiar with the brands of old typewriters, but I actually do have one. It was a gift.
Yeah, I don't. And I never write with typewriter or pencil pen anymore. Right. I mean, I don't write anything on paper apart from shopping lists now.
So that was Turkey. And you went to university, though, for economics, not for creative writing or anything.
Exactly. I mean, that was kind of like...
What was the what happened there? Like, why? Like, this is an interesting kind of thing that happened to you, because it's like you already knew that you wanted, that you were good at this, or mm-hmm. that you felt mm-hmm. good mm-hmm. doing mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. but for some reason you still did economics.
Yeah. Well, it was to study economics was definitely, it was a pragmatic decision on my side.
Okay.
But also, like, I was so naive, so young, that, like, when I was 17 years old, I never thought that it would have been possible to do this as a job, like, to be a writer or something like that. And then, now, after, like, I don't know, 20 years, I realized that, yeah, I was right. It's not possible. I mean, it's not possible to make a living by writing what I write right now. I mean, of course, there's a theoretical possibility that you can make a living by writing stuff. But, you know, with my set of skills and with my ambitions or intentions in literature, that's not possible for me. So maybe it was a wise decision. But then, of course, that also had something to do with the, you know, university entrance system in Turkey, this whole kind of weird thing, because I was kind of a bright student, and there were specific fields, and in those fields, like, there were specific departments which you had to choose. So you can't just, you know, if you are in a specific field, you can't just go out of that, and, you know, you can't say, like, I want to study philosophy or I want to study civil engineering, let's say. So, and in my field, like, everyone was raving about, everyone was talking about either management or economics. So, and I didn't even seriously, consciously think about it. I thought, okay, so, you know, it seems like I have good results, I'm good at this. So let me study economics, what can go wrong?
Okay.
So that was that. But apparently later on I realized that it was not the best decision I had in life.
Okay.
But then I studied it. Yeah.
Okay. So that was at 17 you made that choice to...
Exactly, exactly.
To do economics.
Yes, yes.
And but throughout that whole time you were still working on your fiction?
Oh, I mean, before that, in high school, not seriously. I can't say there was no structure in what I was writing. It wasn't very serious stuff, to be honest. It was more like, like comic stuff, which I wrote mostly... For my own pleasure. Yeah. But then in college, when I was in university, then I seriously started to think about it and started to write about it. And I realized that I have this passion. And still to this day, this is the only thing, could be one of the only things in life that I'm so passionate about. And I still have this feeling. And back then, this kind of... happened to me like a revelation. And then, of course, but the stuff I wrote was not good. And especially right now, when I look back to the little stories that I wrote when I was, let's say, 18, 19, they're shit. But, you know, back then you don't realize this. Back then you're thinking that, wow, okay, you know, you don't say to yourself, oh, yeah, I created a masterpiece, but you are also kind of pleased with what you have been doing, what you're writing. And it's got published in a few places,
really?
I wrote, yeah.
Okay.
Because there was this little magazine within the university, but also sold outside the university. So it wasn't the most famous or popular literature magazine, but still, it was something. And they started publishing my stuff, which were, again, like little stories, short stories. Of course, it gave me some confidence, but there was... I talked too much now. I'm going to wrap it up. There was one interesting turning point for me. After a while, I also started to go to the meetings of this magazine.
Okay.
Like, you know, and in these meetings, there are some teachers, some like big shots, let's say, and there are a lot of students like me. And other people submit stuff, and they are being read aloud. And we discuss about them, whether to publish them or not. And also, when I send something, it is also being read aloud and discussed by other people while I was there. And then these teachers, mostly, they want to encourage you, you know, they don't want to, you know, break your spirit, blah, blah. So they were kind of like, okay, I wrote something, and they had, okay, it's not bad, we can publish it, blah, blah. And then there was this, like, a mythological character. There was this poet who was... I think back then 15 years older than me, who was a PhD student in the same university, and he was blind. Okay. So that's why I said the mythology part. And he was okay. And he was speaking like this with this very serene voice, very, how could I say, very calm guy, very collected. And he said, okay, can I say something? And then he said, I know that the writer of the text is also here, and he will hate me for saying this, but maybe he would also be grateful in the future. But this text should not be published anywhere, he said. And then he came up with reasons. He didn't leave it at there. He explained it. He convinced the others, actually. Okay. But he didn't convince me. I really hated him. So I was really, fuck you, who are you? You know, what is this? But then, after a while, it sinks in.
Yeah.
And I think it was one of the best things happened to me back then that age. Because, really, someone at some point has to come to you and tell you that, okay, you know, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So it was good that he said.
Yeah, it's definitely part of the process of getting better. So you went from, you said you lived in the States for a while.
Exactly. Yes.
Actually, I already knew that. My wife told me about that.
Mm-hmm,
I thought you lived in New York though.
No.
She told me New York, but
No. Yeah, I mean, I've been
New Hampshire.
Traveling there a lot because my girlfriend was there.
Okay.
Yeah, but I lived in New Hampshire in a small town again, and I was bored. So bored.
I can imagine. What was the name of the town?
Durham.
Oh, Durham.
Yeah. That's where the University of New Hampshire is.
Oh, okay.
So I was studying there.
Yeah. And so you brought with you, I'm assuming you brought with you your love for writing there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I mean, also when I was in Turkey, what I did, and thank God I did it, that, I didn't go to too many of the classes. I wasn't a very good student, to be honest. But then we had this fantastic library in the university. And I read a lot. Especially in terms of, modern Turkish literature. I read almost every important seminal text, please. I could find there. I was devouring them, and afterwards I never read I read before them, because I had nothing to do. I mean, it's a good time, really. And when I went to US, of course, yes, the ambition was still there, and people were, they knew that at least my close circle of friends, there were expectations about me. Everyone was waiting for me to write something, to come up with a book or something, and I was also expecting it from myself. But then I was lazy. Okay. I couldn't do it. I kept writing in the US, but it wasn't a good time of my life, and I wasn't feeling very, very happy, very, very well. So that's, in that sense, it didn't work out, I would say. And also, being a student there with limited money, limited prospects, to be honest, it's also, I didn't have much time to write or to concentrate on writing. And that was kind of a dark period of my life in terms of my literary ambitions.
When you were in New Hampshire?
Yeah, okay. When I was there.
So when you left Turkey to go to New Hampshire, you still had this in your heart, but you didn't necessarily... You weren't being productive.
Exactly. That was one thing. I wasn't being productive. And also, as far as I remember, I was also kind of having doubts about myself, about my writing. Mm. So that was also another reason. This self-confidence of early years of my college time was kind of waning away.
Mm.
And I was starting to doubt myself. So at that point, I think I was thinking maybe this is good as a hobby, something I can do as kind of for myself, but then, maybe I should stop having these ambitions of publishing a good book and then publishing another, blah, blah. So
do you think that, do you think that it had to do with more than just the kind of feedback you got from the this mythological
No, that has been long forgotten. Oh, okay. And I also kind of, I think I improved myself in a bit. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, like, I remember this, I can't remember the guy's name, this comedian, British comedian, saying like, okay, I have one thing to tell you, all the girls in the world, you know, just stay away from the guys who are under 25 years old. So, you know, they are so shit that, you know, just, you know, go somewhere else, go to Kazakhstan or something, but just stay away from them, you know. So in that sense, yeah, I think that was the country, or maybe Uzbekistan, I don't know.
And why was he saying
well, he had a reasoning, and I kind of find it right, to be honest. So, and back then I was under 25, and you have these doubts about yourself. You have these, I don't know, like, you're not sure about your decisions about life. You don't know what to do. It's like, you know, you're drifting away aimlessly, and it's not true, of course, for every male person under 25. No, it's like, but I mean, at least in my case, yeah, that was another reason that I didn't know what to do. I wasn't sure about, like, you know, what I am writing, why I am writing. I mean, is it worth it? Mm. You know, you're kind of this self agony, this self questioning is at least in my case so big that it also kind of stopped me from working on my projects.
And you also mentioned that you felt that the people around you, your friends and family, had expectations.
Exactly.
Of this,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
How did what kind of impact did that have on you? Did you think that also kind of pushed down the productivity? Or
I think so. Back then, yes. I mean, afterwards, it was good to have that, actually. And even right now, it's good to have it. Like, I mean, I published one book, and after 2 years, people were asking, okay, you know, when is the next one? Where is it? Are you writing? Blah, blah. And it's good now. I like this kind of pressure. Oh, okay. But back then, it also didn't help, I must say, because, you know, like, because I was not sure about myself. And then when you're not sure about what you're going to do, and if you're going to do it, then this extra level of expectation doesn't help you. It just even drags you down further. Mm. At least that was my case. So.
Okay. So that was New York. New York. She's got it in my head that it's New York. So that was New Hampshire.
No, I never lived in. I don't like New York either.
Yeah, sorry. I don't like it either.
Okay,
that's why I don't live there anymore. Okay. No, it's fine. I have nothing against the city. It's just, you know, enough is enough with the. And I was there for 33 years. But
all right,
anyway, this is not about me. This is about you, Dennis.
All right.
So, and then, and you were doing a master's there?
Yeah.
Again in economics.
Okay. I finished it. I started the PhD.
Oh.
Yeah, and then I left the PhD in the middle of it. And
you're just like,
it was enough. I couldn't do it.
Especially for something you're not, like, passionate about.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
PhDs are no joke. It's like, I mean, doing... Seems like what you did in economics, you know, going from Turkey to New Hampshire, I mean, still, it's a lot.
Exactly. I unfortunately realized this by, you know, experiencing it, but yes.
So then you came back to Turkey after that?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Then I came back to Turkey. I spent some time in Turkey. There have been also some bureaucratic problems with my visa and blah, blah. So that was another reason that I kind of... I was alienated from United States after all this ordeals, you know. It wasn't the intention to be that way, but that was a big mistake somewhere, and I had to spend 6 months in between my studies in Turkey because I couldn't go because there was a problem with my visa. And the problem was it's so fucked up, actually, when I think back right now. There was another guy with the same name in US who was a criminal. So they had to prove a lot of things, and my name is quite a popular name actually in Turkey, as also the last name. So that was at least the official reason for that. So anyways, yes, afterwards I came back to Turkey, and then my wife right now, but back then she wasn't, she applied for a PhD in Berlin. She got accepted.
Okay.
And we wanted to live together, So I thought, okay, why not? Maybe I should also come here. But I didn't want to go on with anything academic. So, and then I came through her, let's say. I mean, we got married to make it easier. And then I came here.
You had, really? So you got married in Turkey and then came here?
Yes, exactly, exactly, exactly. I mean, she came before me. And then after the marriage, like, I also applied for this... there's a special law or procedure for people like us who are like non-European Union citizens. And then like after 6 or 7 months afterwards, I also arrived here.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the you said you wrote a novel or was it a novella?
A novella.
Okay, so the novella that you wrote in Turkey or here in Berlin?
It was in Berlin. In Berlin. I mean, like, there are two books. One is like this, the first one, collection of short stories. I mean, half of that was written in Turkey, I think, some of the stories. But most of the stories, I also wrote them here in Berlin. And because I've been living here for a long time. So, and then this, the second one, the novella, the this experimental thing, also we wrote it, at least my parts, I wrote them. I wrote them here. And now I'm working on another book, which is also a collection of short stories.
Okay.
Yeah.
So another sort of theme, recurring theme that I like to tap into on this series is that, so, you know, there's this journey, right? And it's not just an internal journey. It's also like a physical journey that you're going from, you know, wherever you're born to another, you know, you're traveling around the world. And these locations, they definitely, I, you know, from all my conversations with other artists, you know, this is the 12th episode. And of course, you know, we all, I'm a writer and I've talked to many writers and many artists before. So it seems like location is definitely important. So since you've lived in, so far I can, what you've told us is that you've lived in three places. What relationship for you is there between your work, your art, and the places that you've lived? And it was there a place that was better, worse? Like, what, how did it affect you?
Well, there is, of course, definitely a relationship there. It is, I cannot deny that. And in my personal journey, I would say, let's start with the last one, with here, with Berlin.
Okay.
I think it worked for me in quite unexpectedly smooth way. I mean, I can't kind of make a direct connection between this activity and I mean writing and the place I live. But somehow, I mean, this is the place where I feel myself right now very, very comfortable.
And why is that? Why do you think?
I mean, I think it's about the lifestyle. I mean, like, for example, I never lived in Istanbul, in Turkey, or in New York, let's say. I never lived in these big chaotic cities. So in that sense, here, I realized that, and before here, I was in a small town in the US, which was kind of really boring and very limiting in many ways. And here I had this advantage of being among people, yet kind of living a solitary life. Yes, here in Berlin, here in Berlin. I think that's what I liked most, and like, right, for example, it's just very practicalities of daily life mostly. Like, half of the stories in this book I wrote in a cafe, which I like very much, and I go there with my computer, I sit down, I have my coffee, I greet the other regulars, I write, I leave, and nobody's wiser, and it's very peaceful, very, I don't know, I like these kind of routines which I couldn't establish in other places I lived. So in that sense I think it's also, but also at the same time, I mean, this the whole the whole atmosphere of freedom and at the same time this peacefulness in the city, which which I feel also helps, I think, for my creative projects. So.
Okay.
But at the same time, I could have also wrote maybe in other places. I don't know. This is.
But that's your experience.
Yeah. At least. So, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So that. Yeah, I think one of the main things that I think about Berlin is there's a lot of people doing creative things, and but it's also, you know, the quality of life is quite good for, you know, low cost of living.
Exactly. That's
so since we're talking about, like, you know, meeting other people, and, you know, this whole artist series is actually like my regular therapy session for my own crazy brain.
It's who, like, is the therapist? Yeah.
You okay, are today. Okay, it's a new therapist every time. So, speaking of community and like, you know, other writers and even just your audience, like the people who might read your work.
Mm-hmm.
What's your relationship with them? It's like, do you think about your audience, or, you know, the potential audience when you create work?
I do, but well, that's a difficult one, actually. That's something also I've been thinking a lot, and I don't have a clear-cut answer or solution to that. That's one of the, for example, very popular discussions in Turkish literature. We have this great writer who is the most famous Turkish
Orhan
writer
Pamuk.
Alive. Yes, exactly.
He's Orhan that Pamuk. Famous that I know who he is.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, he's a Nobel Prize winner.
He's great.
So, yes, and he's a great writer. I like him very much, by the way. And he is regularly being accused of writing for an international audience.
Oh. He's being
accused.
Accused
because people think that, okay, like writing for translation, let's say.
Ah.
So, and he's being accused of writing with these poor Turkish.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. And because some people think that, at least that's the theory, that, okay, he thinks that while he's writing his sentences, he's thinking that how would this look in English?
Mm.
You know?
Interesting.
Which could be, like, I mean, it's not that obvious, that direct. I mean, you can't just make an accusation like that. You can't get into the mind of a person and, you know, like, come up with something like this. I find it a bit too much. But at the same time, I can also understand where this feeling or this belief stems from.
Mm.
And yes, I mean, his novels, his stories are quite well designed to be read by an international audience, by especially Westerners.
Yeah. He's definitely puts a lot of work into his. I mean, I think that. The book that I read, I think it was My Name Is Red.
Yeah, that one, for example, is.
Yeah, I think he researched and studied for 6 years to write that book or something.
Yes. That's one of the. There are many reasons. That's one of the reasons I respect him so much.
Yeah.
He's really. I mean, this kind of research going into those novels is like totally amazing. But anyways, I mean, I came into this because. I don't necessarily think that it is a bad thing for a writer to think about the potential audience and to kind of adjust what he's writing. But did I do that? I don't think so, at least not in the first book I wrote.
Okay.
I don't think much about who's going to read this, how are they going to react, or should I change this because, you know, this is my audience, or should I, like, okay, I had some imaginary readers in mind, some of them maybe my friends, some of them really imaginary people, and I tried my best to put myself in their shoes and to read it, to read what I wrote with a different kind of perspective, with a different eye, to see some faults in it, you know, to make some revisions, blah blah. But then I didn't think much about an imaginary audience.
Okay.
But right now I am kind of I'm kind of at least a bit more careful about it, let's say. Okay. Now I'm, because now I know that, I mean, depending on what I write, I more or less have an idea about who's going to buy it, who's going to read it. And it's not a big audience we are talking about here. I mean, short story books are not very popular. So, you know, like, I mean, it's going to be read by, let's say, 1,000, maximum 2,000 people in Turkey. And it's not going to, at least my first book, it's not going to be translated, because it's just very, there are local stories. Most of them are about province, about where I grew up. So they're kind of hard to relate by an international audience. But for example, with just like Orhan Pamuk, right now I'm working on a series of stories which are set in Berlin.
Oh, okay, cool.
So with them, I am being more careful about putting local references to Turkey, or using like Turkish characters, blah, blah, because, you know, that I also, I actually, to be honest, I wanted it to be translated. I wanted it to be read by more people.
Yeah.
Not only people who can speak Turkish, but also people from other languages, other cultures, other countries. I mean, that wouldn't hurt me. That would actually make me very, very happy and satisfied. So in that sense, yes, now I'm being more careful when I'm writing this Berlin things.
Okay, cool. So your relationship to the, you know, the potential audience of your writing has changed.
Exactly, exactly.
And so what about... And what about, you know, other writers, other, you know, you mentioned Orhan Pamuk, obviously he's like extremely famous, but like what about other people like you, like do you feel that there's some kind of, do you feel a need to kind of be around them or to see what other people are doing?
So I've been trying my best to follow at least like the, at least in my genre, in short story, to follow what is going on, especially in Turkey, in modern Turkish literature. Also, English speaking countries, I kind of try my best. But for me, the thing is, like, this is a double-edged sword. I mean, I sometimes wish that I would have been, you know, living in Turkey so that I would have the chance to be in these circles, to meet with people, to be, you know, well connected with people. And this kind of, this is first of all good for your work to be in, you know, like regular contact with other writers, to share ideas, projects, you know, to talk about them, to get feedback, to give feedback, blah, blah. And at the same time, on the other side, it is also good for you to increase your chances in terms of your career. You know, it's like,
it's like networking.
You know, more people. Yeah, exactly, networking. But then this networking is kind of very dangerous, because then you get into this peer pressure thing, and at some point I realized that there are these small, let's say, unofficial groups in Turkish literature, and at some point, like after, let's say, 5 years, you realize that they are kind of writing all the same thing, very similar things, at least,
saying.
You know,
yeah, like, so kind of community.
They would absolutely deny it, but at the same time I feel like, when, as an outside observer, they're kind of losing their free spirit, their independence, and you know, kind of this interaction.
I like that. It's like, there's, like you said, it's a, no, you said it perfectly, it's a double-edged sword. So it's like you could benefit from being around the other Turkish writers, but then there's also a downside to it.
Exactly. So in that sense, I'm thinking that maybe it's better that I'm totally away from this. But the only thing, I'm kind of like, for example, there is also the commercial side of writing. For example, writing for TV, writing for cinema, blah, blah, which I want to try my hand on. So in that sense, of course, it would have been much better if I was in Turkey and connected with people. Because, you know, at this point in my life, I really want to make some money by writing stuff.
Yeah, so that actually brings me to a comment that you made earlier. You said at some point you realized that you can't actually live from writing.
So yes.
When did you first have this thought? And now it seems like you want to go against that thought. You realize that maybe
exactly. I mean, I always knew this somehow deep down, because you know that there were lots of examples, and Turkey is not the best country to make a living by being a writer. But also in other countries, I mean, it is. There are exceptions. There are really big exceptions. But mostly, from what I've seen, if you're not writing a bestseller, if you're not writing for mass market, if you don't have that kind of skills, and if you want to go your own way, then it is more or less impossible to make a good living, to have a luxurious life at least by writing stuff.
Okay.
And of course, that's why I started to do lots of job. I mean, lots of things to make money, to earn a living, basically. But later on, especially after the book got published, of course, I kind of got more confident.
Mm.
And I realized that, you know, I am also... maybe what I write could not be that good, but I'm quite fast. When I'm given a task, you know, I can quickly come up with stuff, write something. I mean, especially if it's not my own project, but if it's being ordered by someone, some magazine, let's say, or like when we were working on the screenplay, for example, they kind of included me, the other two friends, which we co-wrote the screenplay. They kind of included me afterwards. There was already a screenplay and they wanted me to do that part, this part. And I realized that, you know, with that kind of limited setting, I could work quite quite fast and productively. So in that sense, and also like I came to a crossroads in my life. I'm now 39, and you know, like I never did anything related with economics, and the jobs I did here in Berlin were not like the best jobs in the world, and I was not very happy with them, blah blah. So I said that, okay, you know, maybe I would give it another try now. I would try out to make real money by writing stuff and by getting into commercial stuff as well. You know, I'm not gonna be ashamed of writing for, let's say, for a shitty television series. Yes. Let's say
you're not gonna be ashamed for and trying to make a living doing what you
like. Exactly. And then when you look at, I mean, I'm writing in Turkish mostly, as I said. If you really want to make money, you have to do TV or movies.
Okay.
So right now, actually, I am kind of trying my hand at that. With there's one solo project, one project with friends. I mean, at least for a while, that's my intention.
Okay.
To do it that way. If it works out, it works out. If not, then we will see. I mean, in that sense, I'm quite an optimistic person, you know.
Well, yeah.
If it doesn't work out, then I'm going to go find something else.
So that leads me to two questions. So you mentioned that you did some sort of less than luxurious jobs, less than glamorous jobs here in Berlin.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I'm sure that around in Turkey and possibly in New Hampshire as well.
Mm-hmm.
So two questions. What's one of the weirdest jobs you've ever had, or most, you know, or the worst jobs you ever had? And two, well, actually, I forgot what the second question was. Jesus Christ. it's getting late on the Sunday evening. I think it was, let's just answer that first question.
Yeah, sure.
And then I'll try to remember the second one.
Let me think. I mean, I don't know if it was weird, but one of the... Like, it was weird, kind of, but it was also very nice 3 months of my life in my... I think during my first few years in Berlin, there was this company which was doing kind of localization and testing for the computer games.
Oh.
And, you know, mostly they were doing these small mobile games. So I was going there. It was like the task was to test the mobile game for 1 day, 2 days, and to get paid for on an hourly rate.
Mm.
But then there was this big computer game, which is like a really commercial one. And normally they don't publish everything. No, sorry. They don't translate everything in into Turkish for these kind of big projects. You know, they just... put it in English, also in Turkish market, but this one was also translated. So my task with another Turkish friend was just to play the game from the beginning till the end, and to hear every kind of dialogue, to hear, to see every kind of text to see and to check if everything was working perfectly in terms of language. Mm. So what I did basically was for 3 months, I went there every day and I played a computer game.
That's cool.
It was, I think, quite great. I mean, like 7 hours of playing, 1 hour of reporting, and going home. So, nice. But I was having nightmares, like killing people.
Yeah, that happens.
I don't know if it was good for my psyche, yeah. But you know, in any case, I really enjoyed doing that one.
All right, cool. I remember the second question. So you mentioned that, you know, you think that TV and film mm-hmm. is like the place to mm-hmm. make money. Mm-hmm. When did you realize that?
Oh, through a good friend of mine, actually two friends of mine who were kind of also, we had similar world views, we had similar, like, they also didn't want, I mean, the whole problem stems from the fact that, I mean, you don't want to go into an office job. Okay, I studied economics. I could have been a banker. I could have been worked in a big company, in a multinational corporation, blah, blah. But, you know, like, it was a nightmare scenario number one for me and for these friends of mine as well. So they opted to stay in Turkey, and then they went into this business, this TV series business, which was, I mean, it's still big, but back then, like, I'm talking about, like, let's say 10 years ago, it was really quite big, quite popular. All these series, people were making shitloads of money. And they kind of managed to involve themselves also in this business. And through them, I realized that, oh, yes, there is something here. Mm. You know, it's possible to make money by writing. Although they hated to do because it was kind of very...
It gets
very
boring,
straining, boring, you know, like, I mean, at some point you lose all your creative spirit because, you know, day in, day out you have to come up with, and in Turkey the industry is quite fucked up compared to America, for example, and you know, there's this new series, for example, one episode is more than 2 hours. And every week there's a new episode. So every week you have to come up with a screenplay of 2 hours. Mm. This is really too much and it's rough. But at the same time, yes, I mean, you are making money. Yeah. You're making good money.
And so you realized that through your connections and
exactly. I mean, at least the details, I realized them through them, and then later on also this guys which we worked in a screenplay, they are quite good filmmakers, quite established filmmakers in Turkey, and also through them now I know all the details.
Okay, so I've got just a couple more questions or categories of questions, really. But before that, I want to check how we're doing on time. I do. 10 minutes.
All right.
I think we can whip something up in 10 minutes here.
Yeah.
So basically, we you mentioned it earlier that you have a place here in Berlin.
Yes.
So this, to me, is like, I know you because of this, and also you know, through my wife and everything. Mm-hmm. But it's also really crucial to the whole idea of this show, which is like, how do you make your living as an artist? How do you balance the financial aspects with the creative aspects? And and so tell us about the horse bar.
Yes. Okay. I mean, horse bar is like, it was opened almost 3 years ago. I'm not the sole owner of the place. We are two. I have a business partner as well. Also, he's from Turkey. And we used to work in the same company. That's how we met each other, like 6 years ago, I guess it was. Mm. I mean, at some point, I mean, he was also very bored with his job and he wanted to do something else. Mm. And I had the same sentiment. But then, you know, like, when you have too many drinks on a night out with your friends, you always come up with such ideas. You're like, yeah, let's have our own place, you know, let's open a bookstore, let's have a short film, blah, blah, you know. It's always exciting, and the other day everyone forgets about it. Nobody checks each other. Nobody even, you know, mentions it casually in a talk, because it's kind of embarrassing sometimes. But then my business partner, Arman, he was adamant. Mm-hmm. He was resolute. He just kept reminding me that, okay, are we doing this? Are we doing this? Are we doing this? And I was afraid. I never did something like this in my life. I mean, I didn't think I was made for this kind of thing, you know. But then somehow he managed to convince me, because, and the reason he managed to convince me was, like, with the jobs I have been having in these startups, I didn't have any future.
Yeah.
And like this was very basic thing. I mean, I wanted to kept writing, and I knew that with my writing I couldn't make money. So in order to keep writing, I need time, and in order to find the time, I needed some kind of an occupation, some job, some business. So the whole idea was basically, you know, let's sell this place. If it works out, I will have more time to write stuff. So it will make me happy.
Buy the place.
Yeah, exactly. It will kind of on the emotional side, I'm going to be totally self-satisfied, totally happy, because I will have more time to write my stuff, which is the thing I am passionate about. And also, I will have a living. So did it work out like that? Kind of, but not as we planned it, not as we expected it. We are still, it is going okay, but we are still struggling a bit.
Okay.
But I'm optimistic.
And that's good. I like that you keep saying that. Gotta remind yourself. I try to remind myself all the time to just stay optimistic. This whole show, the artist series, is really, it's about inspiring other people and non-artists as well to just like realize that you can have the life that you want. You can kind of find solutions to problems, and I just feel like artists always have interesting, creative ways of like solving the problems of life. So that's good. It's going good, and that's over here in Neukölln, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it is not very, very far away from where we are. Where we are right now?
Where is
it? It's on Allerstrasse number 3.
Number three.
It's called Horse Bar.
Yeah,
yes,
cool.
It's
very,
like
very
the parallel
cool spot, yeah.
parallel street to this one. So
yeah, cool.
Yes, exactly.
And I would actually love to do a podcast over there. It's such a good vibe.
Be my guest anytime. Exactly.
So, final question is basically the weirdest, most difficult question answer.
Okay.
Why? What was that? would you go out with me on a date?
I would.
Oh, great. That wasn't so difficult. I thought it was going to be much more, much stranger. No, the question is why? Why do you write? Why do you do it? You mentioned before you feel that you're good at it and that you could, you know, that yeah. But what's the motivation besides besides being good at it?
Yeah.
If there's nothing, also, you know, it's like maybe just do it. You know?
I mean, yeah. This is a difficult one always.
Yeah.
The last question.
Yeah. To be honest, first of all. I write to be liked.
Oh, wow.
I like the feeling that, I mean, someone reads it, comes to you, tells you that, wow, okay, this was good. So this is one of the things.
Okay.
And this is,
it's very honest.
Yes, exactly. I mean, this is good. But the most important part for me, at least, is I feel like this is the only thing I'm good at in life.
Okay.
And this is the only thing I am very passionate at in life. So in this sense, these are the things which kind of keep motivating me to come up with, to write something. And there's this feeling of like, especially sometimes I plan what I write, and I plan a story. I know the whole storyline. I know what I'm gonna write. And sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just improvise. I start with a sentence, with an image, with one word sometimes, and then I just start to improvise. And while doing that, there is this fleeting moment of even I could say lust, you know, like you lose yourself in that. You are kind of, it's similar to trance. It's like, and this is a very rare pleasure of life.
Okay.
To be honest, and this is the only time I can. I mean, I don't do drugs. I don't like. I mean, even if I do them, I don't think it's the same thing.
Right.
You know, so this kind of It doesn't happen very often, to be honest, but when it happens, it is worth it. And this is this is also one for me a big reason. But otherwise, you know, like I don't have a message to tell people. I don't want to transmit anything, or these are not my things. It's just for me, these are the most like personal reasons. And then also, like, last thing, you write, you come up with stuff, you create stuff, blah blah, you know, like and then you realize that it's in vain, you know. It's like, what the fuck is this? What I'm doing? I mean, what's so this piercing kind of self-questioning ensues, and then comes the kind of self-realization that, okay, then maybe I should write about this feeling of vain. And then you start to write about that.
Okay.
Which is maybe I am kind of feeling like I'm on that stage.
Okay.
And also, like, you know, I like to tell stories. Not only in writing, you know, like when I'm with five friends, I mean, people ask me, okay, then tell us something, and I tell them something, and it gives me big pleasure to tell stories to people, either real stories or, you know, fictional stories, made up stories, whatever. So I love to tell stories. That's why I write.
Cool. Yeah, we can definitely have another episode just about that.
Let's tell each other stories.
We could. So So I just wanted to say thank you again, Dennis, for being on Voices from the Dark.
Matteo,
what's the music? What was the music that we were listening to in the background? Oxygen. So you're listening to some music in the background. I didn't play tracks this episode because I just didn't have the time to put it together. So Oxygen
Trilogy.
Okay, the Oxygen Trilogy. All right, cool. So I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Dennis, and also the Oxygen Trilogy in the background there. That is the episode for today. Thanks again, Dennis.
You're welcome.
Shout out to RBL Berlin, La Better Lab, Horse Bar, of course, and to Conor McGregor for getting his ass kicked. So have a good night, people. Thank you for listening. I'm going to go to the next one.